the Henry H. Guterman Professor of Talmud at Bezer Yeshiva Program at University and has been Rosh Yeshiva since 1994. He also serves as spiritual leader of Congregation Agudas Yisrael in Passaic, New Jersey. Rav Sacks graduated from Yeshiva College in 1981, received smicha from Reitz in 1984, and received smicha Yadin Yadin in 1986. Today, Rav Sacks will be speaking about Lifnei Iver, enabling a Jew to sin. Rav Sacks.
Okay, thank you, Yoni. It's a pleasure to join you this morning. Just simply the thought of giving together before a difficult day at work is something that is inspiring for us in the yeshiva. We're used to the talmidim, obviously, who come each and every day to engage in the enterprise of Limud HaTorah, but to see that this is done on this level is something which is quite, quite exemplary. I was asked to announce that the shir should be a refuah shleima for Yitzchak Yaakov ben Bas Yesara as well. The topic of Lifnei Iver, enabling a Jew to sin, is one that has broad impact and ramification. You know that when the Rishonim attempted to divide the mitzvah HaTorah, there were various different types of classifications. We're used to, for example, a division of the Rambam, mitzvah saseh as opposed to mitzvah lo saseh, positive commandments, negative commandments. Rav Sadia Gaon divided all the Tariq mitzvahs based on 10 categories, and that corresponded to the Aseres HaDibros. Each one represents a world, an entirety of the mitzvahs Hashem. And a further distinction that we're also quite used to is the difference between mitzvahs that are ben Adam l'makom, that hinge on our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and obligations ben Adam l'chavero, interpersonal relationships. And the Ramban points out in Aseres HaDibros that this is not contrived. This is a fundamental distinction. In fact, the Aseres HaDibros were given on two different luchos. Why was that? Because that is the natural division. The first five represent mitzvos that are ben Adam l'makom, that is ritual. And then you have the latter half, which are obligations ben Adam l'chaveiro. And the Ramban points out that the very bottom of the first column, that is the mitzvah of kibud av va'em, because after all, honoring parents serves as a bridge, as an elision. It has elements of mitzvos ben adam l'makom. When we honor parents, it's a form of playing tribute, homage to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but also on a level of hakara satov, certainly simply to thank parents for bringing us into this world, for rearing us, for raising us. That also is part of this mitzvah. So kibud av va'em, no doubt, serves as a fascinating model of a mitzvah that blends, it's a confluence of aspects ben adam l'makom and those that are ben adam l'chavero. Not long ago I gave a shir in Los Angeles. They asked me to give a shir on going green l'halacha, environmentalism. To what extent is that considered to be a priority? And I began with this very distinction. The fact that one is obligated to concern himself with the well-being of environment. On the one hand, it's an interpersonal relationship that we owe to others. But also the Midrash tells us, you know, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Adam HaRishon a tour of this world, he said, you know, I'm allowing you to reap benefit, but yet with the condition of Shelo Techarev Esalami, that, you know, you can't destroy it. You have to build it and cultivate and nurture for subsequent generations as well. And therefore, even the concept of going green, environmentalism, is something that blends the two domains of Ben Adam L'Makom and Ben Adam L'Chavero. And this, I would suggest, is certainly true regarding the prohibition found in Sefer Vayikra, Parshas Kadoshim, V'lifnei Iver lo sitein michshol. A person, in a very literal sense, is not allowed to place a stumbling block in front of one who is blind. And even though one would hardly be tempted to engage in that practice, but yet the Gemara and the Medrash extends this prohibition of Lifnei Iver to other very relevant applications. The Sifra writes to give a person an Eitzara. A person, for example, even an investment, is asking me that should I invest, should I not? And a person has a certain hunch that this investment is going to turn sour, or quite the opposite, the investment is something that is going to reap significant benefit, and I will purposely mislead that individual. I will offer him counsel that I well aware is something that is less than ideal. The Gemara tells us that that also is the prohibition of literally placing a stumbling block in the presence of a blind individual, not simply physically, but rather to go ahead and to offer ill advice. And the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Davav also applies this when it comes to mitzvos and averos. The Gemara gives us a dramatic depiction of a person who is a nazir, who's not allowed to drink any wine whatsoever, and he is on the opposite side of the riverbank, and wine is out of reach. And as tempted as he is to go ahead and to take a taste, a sip of wine, but it is something that is inaccessible to him. But yet, I have the bottle, and I toss him the bottle of wine, and he goes ahead and drinks. No doubt he violates the prohibition of Nazirus, but the Gemara writes that I have transgressed this Torah prohibition of Lifnei Iver, Losite Mirshel, baiting, facilitating, making it possible for a person to violate an Avera. That also is part of Lifnei Iver, Losite Mirshel. And I would suggest that this prohibition also has those two elements. Ill advice, that certainly indicates that aspect of ben adam l'chavero. It's an interpersonal obligation, and therefore it must be concerned with the well-being of others, and therefore ill advice is considered to be forbidden min hatar. But yet, how does one understand that second half? When it comes to the area of mitzvos or averos, a person cannot partner, a person cannot be a facilitator in the performance of any aspect of avera. You know, one could argue that also is considered to be ill advice. If I tell a person to invest or not to invest, if that is considered to be inappropriate, that is a Torah prohibition. Can't the same thing apply to doing that which is wrong? A person encourages another to eat that which is not kosher, encourages an individual to transgress the Dinei Shabbos. In such a case, isn't that a stark example of inappropriate advice? And therefore, maybe all of that is considered to be part of Eitzarah, advising a person inappropriately. Or maybe one could argue somewhat differently, that maybe when it comes to the realm of mitzvos and averos, this is part of that heading of Ben Adam Lamakom. In the following sense, I go ahead and I facilitate an avera. In that case of the Gemara, a person goes ahead and drinks wine who is a Nazir. Or the Gemara gives us another example that applies to non-Jews as well. A non-Jew is not allowed to partake of Eiver Min Hachai, a limb that is severed, that is ripped from a live animal. And imagine that I would provide that to a non-Jewish individual. He would eat, he would partake, he would violate a Torah prohibition. The Gemara writes that is your violation of Lifnei Iver, Lositein Mechshol. In what sense is that true? Perhaps one could argue that it's not merely inappropriate ill advice, but maybe one could argue that there you're partnering, you have a hand, a share in the Avera itself. When we attribute that Avera, who is responsible for the fact that there was this given transgression? The answer is twofold. Number one, the person who violated the Avera, that certainly is the case, but additionally, the provider, the facilitator, he also has a hand in that transgression as well. And perhaps one could argue that aspect of a lifnei iver is ben adam lamakom. It means that we attribute that act not only to the person who commits, who violates that avera, but even to the one who caused that consequence as well. In a word, we would say, in the language of learning, that lifnei iver, you become a shutaf, you become a partner, you're a broker in that illicit act, in that avera itself. And there is a comment that the Baal HaMor has, it's based on the sugya in Sanhedrin of Ayin Dalet, where the Baal HaMor raises a very fascinating issue. You know that not all of the mitzvot HaTorah are on equal footing. We certainly have a hierarchy of mitzvot. Some mitzvot, the consequence is more significant, more severe than others. And the Baal HaMor raises the following interest. I provoke a person to violate Isser A, and I provoke another person to violate Isser B. And Isser A pales compared to the second prohibition. Is it all the same that's ill advice, whether the advice is investment, or whether it's Avera A, whether it's Avera B, or should I argue that really is not true at all? The Lifnei Iver means it's as though you are a partner, you have a hand in that element of Avera, to the extent that Lifnei Iver takes on the characteristics of the given Avera itself. The Baal HaMor writes, for example, the following. That Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Ayin Dalet tells us that there are certain transgressions that a person is obligated to be willing to give up his life rather than violate that prohibition itself. This is what we call Yehareg Vayavar. Typically speaking, a person is not obligated to sacrifice his life in order to fulfill various mitzvos of the Torah. After all, one of the mitzvos is V'chai Bahem. A person has to maintain his well-being, his life. And therefore, typically speaking, a person will be told, well, if your life is at risk, one is allowed to transgress Shabbos in order to save a life. Pikuach nefesh is doche, that overrides almost all of the Torah prohibitions. But there are certain exceptions. When it comes to ritzicha, killing, for example, we wouldn't argue that a person can kill in order to save their own skin. The Gemara tells us, my chazis, the damach didach samach tvei, that why literally is your blood redder than his? Why do we take a life in order to save a life? The same is true when it comes to idolatry as well. There we don't assume a person can engage in pagan idolatry even if his life is at stake. And the same is true when it comes to gili arayos, illicit relationships as well. The Balamor raises the following issue. The person is not going to engage in any one of these practices. He is not going to murder. He's not going to engage in arayos. He's not going to go ahead and participate in avodah zarah, but he is a facilitator. He has a hand in others doing so. The Balamor maintains an interesting possibility, and that is that lifnei iver of yehareg vayavor is yehareg vayavor. Provoking or facilitating, having a hand in that avera, is considered to be a part of that avera itself. It's not merely giving ill advice, but rather we attribute that transgression to the one who had a hand in making that possible. If I throw that wine to the Nazir and he drinks, he should not have done so. But I cannot walk away and say that, you know, that why did he do so? I really was innocent. But rather, there is a hand that you have in the Avera itself. You know, the Gemara gives us in Kedushin Daf Lamed Beis a somewhat common application of this prohibition of Lifnei Lo Sitin Michsha. How often does a person throw wine to a Nazir? How often do you give Eivir Menachai to a person who is not Jewish? But the Gemara tells, right, the fascinating story. The Gemara tells us that Rav Huna wanted to test the character, the disposition of his son Rabba, to see whether he was quick to become angered or whether that he was very mild-mannered and he could exercise restraint. So the Gemara tells us the following, that the father of Huna took a possession of his son and ripped it in his presence in order to see how his son would respond. The Gemara tells us, how is he able to do that? After all, the Dilma Grasach, that perhaps the son would become angered at his father for doing so, maybe he would lash out, and as a result, v'ka'avar alifnei iver lo sitei michshal. And therefore, the parent is unnecessarily, unfairly baiting that child. That's an example the Gemara gives of lifnei iver lo sitei michshal. A person, for example, you know, sometimes we do this in life regarding our children, sometimes regarding students, sometimes regarding others. We bait, we provoke, and all of a sudden it causes, it elicits a certain response. The child will lash out. And I'll turn to the child and say, you know, that's not an appropriate response. That's not how you should act. No doubt that's true. But the Gemara writes, there's a measure of responsibility that one bears as well, simply for provoking, for baiting, for having a hand in that action as well. It's an important mandate that the Gemara writes in the Kedushin Daf Lamed Beis, that appropriate mentoring, appropriate parenting, that also each and every day borders on lifnei iver lo sitein michshal. Others will look to you as a model, and therefore one has to always be on guard, because after all, as a consequence of what we do, if there is that inappropriate action, dilma rasach v'ka'avar lifnei iver lo sitein michshal. You know, there's a fascinating technical dispute. It's between Reb Chaim Ozer and the Chazon Ish regarding the following issue. I try to bait a person, for whatever reason, to violate Naveir. In the literal sense, I take a stumbling block and I place it in front of the blind person. And for whatever reason, the blind person walks around it and he doesn't trip. And I do it again. And somehow, he avoids stumbling. Clearly, if I do so and he stumbles, I give the wine to the Nazir and he drinks. So I have a hand in that action. But what happens if somehow all my baiting, all my tempting, all my effort somehow does not result in the fact that any transgression is violated? Is there still a prohibition of lifnei iver lo sitein michshal? Do you argue that, look, it's inappropriate to bait, irrespective of The response, what right do you have to tempt, to provoke? And therefore, that itself, in a literal sense, besimas mikshal, lifnei iver lo siten mikshal, placement of an impediment, placement of an obstacle, that itself is considered to be lifnei iver lo siten mikshal. Or would one argue, no, that's really not true. It's not the placement of that obstacle, that mikshal, but rather attribution. When an avera is committed, then in retrospect, we take a step back and say, who's held responsible for this? Not only the one who performed the avera, but even the one who facilitated the avera as well. But if there was no avera, maybe there is no lifnei iver. After all, if we frame lifnei iver as partnering, you're a partner in that avera, maybe one could argue that all of that is fine and true if the consequence occurs. If the blind person trips, you know, then I take a step back and say, who caused that? Who placed that obstacle in his path? But barring that reality, maybe there is no prohibition of lifnei iver lo siten mikshal. That story that I mentioned, Kedushin Daf Lamed Beis, that Rav Huna went ahead and ripped the garment in the presence of his son Rabba. The Gemara says that, why was that appropriate? Because Dilma Rasach, v'ka'av lifnei iver lo siten mikshal, that maybe he would have become angered, and you're going to violate the Isser of lifnei iver. I would suggest there are two ways of reading that line in the Gemara. Dilma Rasach, maybe he would become angry, v'ka'av lifnei iver lo siten mikshal. Does the Gemara mean to say, if and only if and when? If, in fact, Rabba would have responded inappropriately, then we would have turned to Rav Huna and say, why did you set up such a situation, causing him to breach the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em? Or does one argue, no, that's not what the Gemara means at all. The mere baiting, the mere doing so, that itself is forbidden. Why? Because of the possibility, the likelihood, or even the possible response that Dilma Rasach, perhaps one would become angered, and as a result, v'ka'avra lifnei iver lo siten mikshal. See, if it's in terms of ill advice, maybe one could argue that it's inappropriate to give that advice regardless of whether the person does or does not act on the advice that you give him. What type of character, what type of person would consciously go ahead and mislead? But if one is going to argue that, no, not necessarily, it means that one is partnering, one becomes a broker in that avera, so maybe it means, as the Chazon Ish writes, that only when the transgression is in fact violated, that's when we assume that there is that element of lifnei iver lo siten mikshal. You know, in that case of the Gemara that I mentioned, of Avodah Zarah Davav, a Nazir, other side of the riverbank, I go ahead and I toss him the wine. Is that lifnei iver? The Gemara says yes, but that would depend. Maybe one could argue, tossing him, providing him with the wine, baiting, tempting, that itself is considered to be the prohibition of lifnei iver lo siten mikshal. Or maybe one could argue, no, it's only if the Nazir drinks the wine. If the Nazir somehow withstands, and he takes the bottle and throws it back to me in such a case, then I'm clear. But if in fact he will drink, and how is he able to drink? Who is it that provided? The answer is, you, by throwing, only then do we assume that there is lifnei iver lo siten mikshal. That's the fascinating dispute. The Chazon Ish assumes that you require an aveira. When a Torah transgression is violated, then we can take a step back and ask that, how did that happen? Who provided? But if there was no aveira, in such a case, then there is no prohibition of lifnei iver lo siten mikshal. Rav Chaim Ozer disagrees and maintains the mere provocation alone is considered to be that which is forbidden. You know, in that case of the Nazir, I would suggest an interesting spin. You go ahead and you toss the wine to the Nazir, and the Nazir drinks that wine. What prohibition did the Nazir violate by drinking that wine? Well, on the one hand, he violated the prohibition of Nazirus. A Nazir, the Torah tells us in Parshas Naso, in Midbar Vav, that a Nazir is not allowed to drink wine, but perhaps an additional issur. By drinking the wine, he has caused that the provider has violated the issur of lifnei iver lo siten mikshal. And therefore, by drinking, not only is there a prohibition of doing so, but now that he did so, now I'm also culpable as well. Interesting, that chain of a lifnei iver, of lifnei iver itself, of that interesting possibility. See, lifnei iver is a sugi. When you look in the Gemara, The applications are somewhat limited, but it opens worlds in terms of the process, the enterprise, especially of inviting a non-religious Jew to your home, for example. Is that considered to be a lifnei iver? Is that considered to be a misayeh la'ovei avera? My desire is certainly one that it is appropriate, but yet undeniably, in the process of doing so, you might be causing a Jew to transgress. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach discusses, Mincha Shlomo Simen Lamed Hey, technically speaking, the Shulchan Aruch writes, you know, is it so simple that I can provide food to an individual knowing that he's not going to be reciting a bracha? After all, doesn't the Gemara tell us in Brachos Daf Lamed Hey that kol hanene lo bracha kilum al, that if a person eats without a bracha, it's as though that you are coveting, that you are stealing from Kadosh Baruch Hu, this world is his. The license to partake is afforded to us when we acknowledge, when we make a bracha to Hashem. Before that, not. Well, is it so obvious then that I'm allowed to go ahead and to do so? And Rav Shlomo Zalman questions that, and let's assume for argument's sake we would say no. You know what? You're going to invite a person to your home and you're going to tell him you cannot partake, or you're not going to invite, or you're going to badger the individual and say that, look, I'm happy to allow you to participate, but you'll have to make this bracha rishona and make this bracha achrona, and as a result, the person will feel uncomfortable, alienated, they will be hesitant to place themselves in such a situation. Again, the influence that one could potentially have is highly compromised as a result of that position. Can you honestly argue that inviting and encouraging, that is called placement of an obstacle? In the immediate sense, perhaps yes, but in the broader picture, a person is hoping to plant seeds that ultimately can bring a person closer to appreciating the Torah Hashem, and can that honestly be labeled as an obstacle of lifnei iver lo sitein mikshol? There's a fascinating comment that Rabbi Kveger has. It's somewhat technical, but it's worth mentioning because it serves as a model for many contemporary and current applications. You know, the Gemara tells us in Makos and Daf Chav that there are certain areas of the face that a man is not allowed to shave. There's Peyas HaRosh and there's Peyas HaZaka. And the Torah tells us, Lo Sakifu Pas Roshchem, a person cannot, for example, right, and take a razor and shave the Peyas HaZakan. A person cannot remove, right, the area of the hair of the temple, the Peyas HaRosh. And Lo Sakifu is rendered in the plural. In the plural. Why is it that Lo Sakifu, what individuals is the Torah addressing? So the Gemara answers that Echad HaMakif VeEchad HaNikaf Loke. That, you know what, there's a prohibition to cut, to remove, and there's also a prohibition to be the object of the removal as well. The person, for example, will have someone else. He'll go to a non-Jewish barber, and he will completely remove the Peyas HaRosh and Peyas HaZakan. I did nothing. I sat there, but nonetheless, there is a prohibition not only to do so, but even to be the object of. That's called the Nisr of Makif, to do, but also the Nisr of Nikaf, to be the subject of the Hakafa. So therefore, lo sakifu, in the plural, echad lo ve'echad lo. So the Gemara tells us as follows, that a man obviously is obligated in both halves. A man cannot have the payas cut, nor can a man cut the payas of another. What about when it comes to, right, a woman? A woman obviously is not included in the nikaf aspect of being the recipient, the object of. That doesn't apply. And the Gemara tells us the following chiddush then, that just as she is excluded from that half, she's excluded from the other half as well. And therefore, that prohibition, after all, it's the same phrase, lo sakifu, that applies to men, it doesn't apply to women. But the Gemara writes this. Does that mean that a woman is allowed to go ahead and to remove the peyas harosh and the peyas hazakan of a man? The answer is no. That's an example of lifnei iver lo sitein mikshol, because as a result of what she is doing, he will violate the iser of nikav. That's what the Shulchan Aruch writes, Yeradeya Simen Kuf Pei Aleph, that a woman cannot engage in hakafa because that is lifnei iver, causing the man to sin by having the peyas harosh, the peyas hazakan removed. An interesting issue, right? A person is a caregiver. a hospital, a nursing home. No, they have to tend to the needs of the particular patient. And let's assume there's a Jewish patient, and part of the job description is to shave that patient, to take a razor and to shave, to remove the peyas harosh, the peyas hazak, and you're asked that, is this allowed? Is this not allowed? After all, this is part of my job description. But what should I do? Is there any license to allow that? Do I argue that no? Simply have to refrain. I have to simply tell them this is not something that I can participate in any shape or form. Let's assume, for example, that caregiver is a man. So in such a case, certainly there's no license to do that. A man is bound by the Isra of Makiv. He's not allowed to remove not only his own, but even the payas of another. And in such an instance, that certainly would be forbidden. So if it was a man who were to call you and tell you that, you know, I'm the caregiver, am I allowed to go in to do so? To remove the payas harosh, payas hazak, and of this Jewish patient, the answer would be no. Rabbi Kivega raises the following issue. What happens if it's a woman? Who is the caregiver? It's a woman who is the nurse. And that is her job description, to go ahead and to shave, right, this particular patient. This is a Jewish patient. You know, the patient sees that the nurse is uncomfortable, you know, because there's some dilemma. He sees that the nurse takes out the cell phone calling the rabbi. Am I allowed to go ahead and to do this? And you know what the patient responds? No problem. I don't want you to get in. I'll do it myself. You don't have to do so. Rabbi Kivega writes the following. If he does it himself, right, it's a more technical approach, but it's important. If he does it himself, what prohibitions does he violate? There's an Isarav, Makif, and Nikaf. After all, the Gemara writes, Makos and Davchav, that HaMakif is Atzmo, two different prohibitions, Makif and Nikaf. If she will do so, really there's no Isarav, Makif, and Nikaf. She's not obligated. But you're going to tell me what? No, Lifnei Iver. By doing so, you're causing a Jew to sin. By her doing so, he only violates the Isra of Nikaf. If she were to refrain, and he would do it himself, he's going to violate the Isra of Makif and Nikaf. If the sum game is that he's going to transgress more without my involvement, can you really call that Lifnei Iver Lo Sitin Mirshal? You're doing a terrible injustice, a terrible obstacle. What's the obstacle? Because if you wouldn't do it, yeah, it wouldn't be done. No, if I wouldn't do it, he would do it himself. And by doing it himself, to Isurin. By my doing so, even though it's something I would never do, but I am saving a particular Avera. Rabbi Kivega suggests that how can you call that Lifnei Iver Lo Sitin Mirshal? We're doing something that looks objectively to be wrong, but in the sum game, if what is being done is to the betterment of, it is saving him from, in such a case, one cannot call that Lifnei Iver Lo Sitin Mirshal. That's a fascinating Rabbi Kivega. It's called the Shulchan Aruch and Simen Kuf Pei Aleph of Yerodeya. The reason it's so relevant, because sometimes, and this I will tell you, as all of these practical areas, it requires that a person ask the appropriate question to thereof, where exactly do you draw the line? Where do you argue that, you know what, this is something that I recognize could be facilitating or causing an avera, but so to speak, what is gained far outweighs that which is at risk, and therefore, as Rosh Shlomo Zalman writes, it is worth offering and being gracious and being hospitable, allowing the person to eat, even if he's not going to make a bracha, because far worse, to deny that person the possibility and to have him walk out angered, upset, and to feel that the Torah lifestyle is something that is inappropriate or not relevant to him. And no doubt, one always has to weigh and measure, right? Inviting a person for Shabbos when we know that there is, let's say, a likelihood that they might drive, is one allowed to apply that principle? That sometimes, the Gemara tells us, in Yuman Daf Peivav, Chalal Shabbos Achas, Kadei Sheishmer Shabbos Asarbe. Sometimes planting a seed, that investment, can reap significant benefit. In a word, you have to have broad shoulders to know that when yes and when no, and it's always important to ask the appropriate questions, but in principle, there are times that one would assume, can you honestly argue that is called a simas mirshal, that is placing a stumbling block in the presence of an individual, when simply our concern is only for their well-being, only for their betterment, and this is a vehicle, this is a tool of being able to go ahead and to plant seeds. I had mentioned the Gemara writes in Kedushin Daf Lamed Beis that modeling is something which is critically, critically important. That, you know, people can look to a Rav, a Rebbe, a Balabas in the workplace. If you are representing a Torah way of lifestyle, eyes will be on you in terms of how it is that one conducts themselves. And to do anything short of the highest bar, the highest measure, aside from the issue itself, but that also has to factor in that concern of alif nei velo sitein mechshol, to be able to mentor, to model, to exhibit, to embody these midos of the Torah is something which is critical. You know, it's very relevant even for the current parshios that we lane. It's interesting, the Torah gives us fascinating models of acts of chesed. The very beginning of last Shabbos is Kriyas HaTorah. Kadosh Baruch Hu appears to Avraham Avinu for the purpose of Bikur Cholim. After all, to give him a bracha, he was recuperating from his bris milah. At the end of this coming Shabbos, the Torah tells us that Avraham Avinu passes away, Kadosh Baruch Hu comes, Vayavareches Yitzchak Beno, for the purpose of Nichum Avelim. So if one were to ask you, where do you find Bikur Cholim? The answer is the very beginning of last Shabbos is Kriyas HaTorah. And where do you find Nichum Avelim? You would argue the very end of Parshas Chayisara. But a fascinating observation, but isn't it a mitzvah? Aside from the example, which is clear, is there a mitzvah Bikur Cholim? A mitzvah of Nichum Avelim? When you look throughout all of the Torah mitzvahs, you'll be hard-pressed to find a mitzvah Bikur Cholim, hard-pressed to find a mitzvah of Nichum Avelim. The Rambam writes, Perek Yudalev Hochasovel, that undeniably, Vahareim Bichlal Vehavdal Recha Kamocha, look, if you have to love a fellow Jew, so love implies doing acts of chesed, which includes Bikur Cholim, Nichum Avelim. But it is somewhat striking that if these acts of chesed are so important to us, after all, this is so much part of the fabric of the Torah Hashem, so why is it that there isn't any explicit mitzvah to go ahead and to do so? And I think the answer is exactly this point. This is what the Gemara comments in Sotan Daf Yud Dalid. Rab Chaber Machanina tells us there is a pasuk. The pasuk is Achrei Hashem Elokeichem Tilechu. Kadosh Baruch Hu turns to us and tells us, follow my lead, follow my example, emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, that, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have taught us the importance of Nichum Avelim or Bikur Cholim by instruction, by telling us, these are the do's and don'ts, this is what you have to do. But the Torah doesn't do so. It tells us the importance, the primacy, the priority of Chesed and Bikur Cholim and Nichum Avelim, not by instruction, but rather by example. Why do you do this? Because this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns to us and tells us, follow my example, follow my lead, because we're obligated to teach and to model the Torah Hashem the same way HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught it to us. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu teaches us these priorities by example, we're obligated to do so as well, to exemplify these midos. Instruction is critical. But I don't have to tell you, you're only going to go so far if you merely lecture, this is what you must or must not do. But if you model this lifestyle, in such a case, then you can turn to others, simply by example, Achrei Hashem Elokeichem Tilechu, and follow my lead. There's a beautiful comment of the Chizkuni. The Chizkuni is found in Parshas Balaoscha. The Chizkuni writes, you know, when it comes to the Avodah which is done in the Beis HaMikdash, a Shevet was chosen, Shevet Levi, the role reserved for the Kohanim, the Levim, to involve themselves in Avodah. And the Chizkuni writes that no doubt that Shevet Levi certainly merited, that they were tapped and they were charged with this obligation. But a very simple question, what was wrong with a more democratic system? Why couldn't it have been that the Bechor, you know, every family, let them have a representative performing the Avodah? Why is it that you had to have a Shevet system as opposed to the Bechor system? The Bechor system didn't survive. What was wrong with the Bechor system? So the Chizkuni writes a fascinating insight, Parshas Balaoscha. He writes as follows, that imagine if the Bechor, the firstborn, would do Avodah. So imagine the following. Hard to know which scenario was worse. A father is a Bechor, he goes to do Avodah, and his son eagerly tells him, you know, can I accompany you? Can I go with you? Can you show me how to do Avodah? And I turn to my son and say, you know what? I'm the Bechor, but you're not. This is not something that you share. Or maybe the opposite scenario, the child is a Bechor, and the child turns to a father or mother and says, can you show me how this is done? And I have to respond and say, you know what? This is not a mitzvah that I have. This is something you have to glean from someone else. This is not something that I can show you. The Chizkuni writes, that was the flaw of the Bechor system. The advantage of the Shevet system is that you teach by example. There isn't going to be a mitzvah that a father has, that his father didn't have, or that his son did not have, and therefore you model. You can use that as an opportunity to go ahead and teach. If the best you can do simply is instruct, without hands-on demonstration, in such a case, that is not going to work in Avodah Beis Hamikdash, and that's not going to work in our enterprise of chinuch as well. You have to model. You have to be able to demonstrate, to show others that example. If a person really reflects, internalizes, understands that mitzvah of Avas Hashem and Avas Yisrael, you're going to act a certain way. If you see other Jews as an extension of yourself, the Ritva writes that all of Knesset Yisrael, each and every Jew in a very literal sense, is considered to be Guf Echad, a single body, a single entity. And therefore, what another Jew experiences is part of my life experience as well. When he celebrates, that's my celebration. When they suffer, that is considered to be part of my suffering. That's part of what it means to be a member of Knesset Yisrael. There's an amazing Tosus. This Tosus is found in Menachos on Daf Lamed Zayin. Tosus tells us the following story. Shlomo HaMelech, the Chacham Mikol Adam, Shlomo HaMelech, was faced with a difficult din Torah. A party was scheduled to come before Shlomo HaMelech, right, for division of an estate. Not so challenging, but how do you go ahead and divide inheritance, divide Yerusha? Shlomo HaMelech probably did not think that this is going to be the most difficult, complex, and intricate din Torah. All of a sudden, they walk in the door. Maisa Shahaya, Tosus writes. This happened. Right? A brother walks in, two heads, a Siamese twin. Maisa Shahaya, two heads. A two-headed individual walks into Shlomo HaMelech. He demanded a dual nachla, pishnai. He wanted a double share, right, of inheritance. And other family members, come on, you're a single brother. Two heads, yes, but one being, and therefore you're only entitled to one. This is Tosus writes. Tosus attests to the fact this happened. You know, one of the most poignant shuvas that Moshe Feinstein has is the separation of a Siamese twin. How do you make that determination? No, both are not going to survive in that particular case. Which do you label as being the being? Which do you label as being the threat? Right. Exactly how do you make that determination? Shlomo HaMelech had such an instance, not in the medical realm, but simply in division of Nachal. So, Shlomo HaMelech had to decide, one being, two different beings, one portion, a dual portion. Tosus said the Psak Halach of Shlomo HaMelech was a single entity, a single being, you're only entitled to one. That's it. That's what Tosus writes. It's found in the Gemara, Menachos Daf Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. Tosus doesn't tell us how Shlomo HaMelech knew that that was true. How did he know? You know, it's an interesting, difficult shaila. How do you define one entity, one being, one unit, independence? How do you do so? So Tosus writes one being, but Tosus doesn't tell us how that conclusion was reached. So when you look in the Gemara itself, in Menachos, on the side margin you have the Shita Mekubetzes printed on the daf of the Gemara. So in that daf, Menachos daf Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, in Os Yurches, the Shittim Kabesis tells us how Shlomo HaMelech knew that that was true. It wasn't that there was a pasuk in Chumash that told him it was true. But empirically, there was a test that Shlomo HaMelech did. Shittim Kabesis writes as follows. Shlomo HaMelech took out a cloth sack and placed it on one head and took a small amount of hot water and poured it on the other head and waited to see who would respond. That's what Shita Kubetzis writes. Shlomo Melech did so. He poured the water on the revealed head, and the concealed head screamed out in pain. Shlomo Melech paskened. That is guf echad. When a person can go ahead and sense and feel, empathize to the extent that even if, right, the occurrence is not directly something that you experience, but nonetheless, you feel that pain, that is an indicator of guf echad. And that's what the Ritva writes is true regarding all of Knesset Yisrael. Right, as much as we see that there's sometimes disagreement and sometimes that people can become very what links us and what binds us far outweighs any other factor, any other concern. And this is what gives rise to the mitzvos of chesed, of bikur cholim, of nichum aveilim, not because it's commanded, but rather simply because this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. This is what we do. You know, if a person were to ask you, the Rambam writes in Perek Vav of Shmona Prakim that when it comes to acts of chesed, for example, a person were to ask you, why are you doing so? If the only answer is, you know, I really would rather not, but what can I do? It's a mitzvah. I have no choice but to do so. No, the Rambam writes that that certainly falls so short of, right, the ideal Oved Hashem. You know, the best, perhaps, indicator is stone. The pasuk tells us was destroyed because of failure to give tzedakah. No, doesn't the pasuk tell us in Yechezkel that yat ani ve'evyon lo hichzika? They didn't support the people who were in need in their environment. And you know what's difficult? Is it so clear that there's an obligation of tzedakah of Bnei Noach? The Rambam writes that Bnei Noach technically are not obligated to do so. But that's the emphasis. You don't only do so because there's a mitzvah to do so. You do so, as the Rambam writes, because of the appropriateness now. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. So I leave you with this challenge, that to realize that there's certain mitzvahs that we do simply because of instruction, even though we don't understand. But yet, part of our observance of the Torah Hashem is because they are vitally necessary, because of positive law. HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands, and therefore we do. But yet, when it comes to so many of the mitzvahs, including Lifnei Iver, there it requires an attachment, a realization of the priority, the importance of the unity of all of Knesset Yisrael. No better way to demonstrate that by example. Each one of us, in all environments, at home, in yeshiva, in school, in shul, in the workplace, have such an opportunity for Kiddush Hashem. Be'ezras Hashem, we should all be zoche through our actions in general, as we represent the Torah Hashem, to serve as that model that others can look to us as we look to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Achrei Hashem Elokeichem Tilechu.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Sachs. Next year is December 15th, Rabbi Baruch Simon, and if you're interested in the Accounting and Financial Planning Network or coming to the December 1st lecture with Rav Schefter, Jack Hess, let me or Dina know, we'll get you the details. Thank you. Have a good day.